just behind the bridge, he lays her down. He frowns, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed the diamond bed. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken in a ring.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today on the program, I've got Matthew Dickman here with us, his book, All American Poem. Matthew, welcome.
Thanks, T. It's nice to be here.
Matthew's actually joining us from Portland, Oregon, so way across the country, out west there. but right before you had to work, too, so it's thanks for...
I had to work right after this. Yeah, I have my shoes and my bus pass lined up by the door.
Right, for the quick departure.
So
you're kind of like the all-American, you know, guy, you know, on the radio and then go to work.
I don't know if that's all American or just really strange.
That's true. Well, hopefully you'll have a cup of coffee at least, or maybe you're enjoying one right now.
I will. Portland is a good place to have coffee.
Well, without further ado, I'm going to read your bio on the back of your book, your first book, All American Poem. So here goes. You sound like there's some foreboding there. It's okay. We'll fill it out. We'll fill it in, Matthew. Okay. Matthew Dickman was born in Portland, Oregon. He is the author of two chapbooks, Amigos and Something About a Black Scarf. He has been the recipient of fellowships from the Michener Center for Writers at the University of Texas at Austin, the Vermont Studio Center, and the Fine Arts Work Center in Provincetown. And we've established that you both live and work in Portland currently.
So. Yes, it's true. I do both of those things.
Daily.
The first thing allows me to do the second thing.
It's true. And so this book, this was published, you won the 2008 APR Honickman First Book Prize. Right?
True, yeah.
And it was published with Copper Canyon Press, and they always do beautiful work there.
They do. It was published through the American Poetry Review, but Copper Canyon Press designs the book and distributes it.
So you're
in... I don't like to mention that, because poor APR usually doesn't get credited for their books after they make them.
Oh, well, so that's good. So give credit to both of the places, because both of them working hard to keep, I don't know, to get poetry out in the world. Good poetry,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, both of them and I should say, not in particular, but both of them in their way, APR through the wonderful literary review and in the past almost 7 years, maybe, this first book prize. And Copper Canyon Press is like, you know, the benevolent poetry god trying to get poetry into everyone's living rooms.
That's true. And that's
an amazing feat.
Wait, what? What?
It's a pretty amazing feat.
Oh, it is. It is. It is an amazing feat. And it seems like that's part of your ethos as well, wanting your poems to be enjoyed by people from, you know, for example, the community where you're from, Lentz in Portland, Oregon, blue collar neighborhood. So poetry for everyone, really.
Yeah, really. You know, I don't have like an audience or something that I'm thinking about when I'm writing the poems, but I do wish and hope for poetry to be in our lives in a more regular way than just read at weddings and funerals. And I also like poetry, just myself as a reader, I like poetry that touches, that has the possibility of touching the lives of many people, not just someone who spent the last 12 years at a university studying Greek literature.
And so you came to poems in high school. You found poetry to find your way into the hearts of the young ladies. Is that fair to say?
Partly,
was it Pablo Neruda?
The mythology, P.
Oh, okay.
And it's partly that story is true. But also when I think about it a little deeper than that. Early on in high school and in grade school, before that, I was involved with theater. And I do think that my experience with theater and being in plays and playwriting instilled in me a love of language to begin with,
yes.
Monologue and dialogue. And I think that helped me to fall in love eventually with poetry.
Yes, the musical quality, the words aloud, definitely.
Yeah.
What's important.
And to be an audience member, you know, sitting and watching a play, it's so moving. And sometimes that can happen in poetry readings too, or just on your own when you're sitting and reading a poem.
So are you also playwriting now and involved in the theater currently, Matthew?
As an audience member, I sometimes will work on little tiny pieces that could be like roughs for theater or something.
Did you work on that when you were in Austin at the?
I did. I did. The program I was in Austin was a multi-genre program. So I had to pick a second genre, and so I chose playwriting. And it was really great, and I think instructive to my writing of poems, too, as far as storytelling goes.
Oh, yes. Yes, because you've been featured when I was looking around on the web for you. Like, you're featured on the websites for the story and narrative And your poem "Grief" is such this. It's a wonderful story in itself about the purple gorilla, who comes in, right, and you spend a few moments with the purple gorilla, and it's a story, you know.
It is a story. That poem, I've been asked, especially when I've gone to high schools and read a couple poems, and if I read that one, people wonder why a purple gorilla, or if it means a particular thing. That's a great thing, I think, about all of us, about human beings, is that we are what an American playwright and teacher and old mentor of mine, Sherry Kramer, called us, meaning-making creatures.
Mm.
And I wish there was more meaning to the purple gorilla, or I wish I had intended the meaning that some people have come up with, these wild and amazing backstories for the gorilla.
Like what?
Well, like the purple symbolizing like Lent. You know.
Oh, so the Catholics
sort of tells of that person's own background, maybe going to Catholic schools or Catholic church, and
right.
And
which you're not unfamiliar with as well.
No, not unfamiliar at all. But when I was writing it, I was thinking about how grief expresses itself in any way that it wants to, and whether that's particular and cruel or strange and surreal. And so I thought, well, you know, then it could be anything. And then purple gorilla kind of came crawling into my head.
And what is that? What does it feel like when you go to these places and you're interacting with people who've maybe in schools where they've studied your poems, and so they're asking you about them? What is it like what's that feeling like when you're talking with them about it, and they're finding all these layers of meaning in it, and they may veer away from your own layers of meaning?
It's strange, but really kind of wonderful. I mean, first of all, the experience is strange and wonderful because it's starting to become more of a normal part of my life, but it seems very much outside of my life in Portland, where I have friends and I write and I punch into work. A great thing it also does is it makes me responsible for the poems in a way. So I have to actually think about them again, not just through writing them, but thinking about them as pieces of art and needing to sometimes talk about them is really kind of cool, but also kind of terrifying at the same time. Because sometimes I don't know what to say, but, you know, I was thinking about grief and about a purple gorilla, or, you know, I have this new poem called Coffee, and it started just about coffee and then ended up being about something else. I'm sure I'm sort of a huge, you know, intellectual letdown with some of those people because I don't have a lot of philosophy or a lot of, even at least on the surface, sort of critical thinking about my poems or when I'm writing them.
Well, do you feel like that's something you want to keep, though, Matthew, because it's something about your work then that will set you apart from maybe other poets who are working closer to the academy?
Maybe. It's, you know, I don't even think about it. I don't think that there's any other way I could write poems. Years ago, like right when I was going to go attend the Michener Center for Writers in Austin, Texas, and attempt to get my MFA, I wrote poems in a very different way. I was more, not thoughtful, but maybe more planning about my poems. I would come up, some idea would hit me, or I'd read something and be inspired to write about it. And then I would really map it out and think about it a lot before I wrote anything down. And then some changes occurred in my life, and I didn't write. I ended up taking time off of school, and I didn't write for almost 8 months or so, anything at all. And I thought, well, when I go back to school, if I write poems again, I'll still do that. And if I don't, it'll be okay. Poems will still be a huge part of my life, and I'll still be a reader and a celebrator of poetry. But I did come back and I did start writing poems again. But what happened after not writing for 8 months is I lost all of those rules that I had made for myself.
Mm.
And now writing poems for me, it's like I often talk about like these, it feels like colorful building blocks, like I'm in kindergarten again. And I'm just putting this stuff together. And sometimes it works and sometimes it comes crumbling down.
And so maybe working the colorful building blocks could be images and pieces and more from the subconscious?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what, Matthew, we're going to take a short break and then we'll come back and we'll hear more. Maybe we could hear the poem Grief when we come back, since we've been talking about it, and give the listeners a chance to hear it. And folks can also hear the poem Coffee because it's online now with the Oregonian, isn't it?
It might be.
So people can hear that poem Coffee that you just mentioned as well. Well, we'll take a short break and then we'll be right back.
Okay, I can't wait.
Okay, today we're talking with Matthew Dickman, his book, All American Poem. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today on the program, Matthew Dickman, his book, All American Poem. So welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, Matthew.
Hey, thanks.
I've got your photo up on the computer here, so.
Up on me. I wish I had your photo here.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it's the magic of radio. I'm supposed to be the disembodied voice anyway, I think. Right? I don't know.
Something like that. Well, at least it's a beautiful disembodied voice.
Ah, you are too kind, Matthew Dickman. Again, too charming. All right. Well, before you have another chance to be charming, let's hear the poem. And God, the Pixies, they were really great then, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. They were amazing. What an amazing band.
Exactly. I wish. So if you were, if you had a dream poetry tour and you were on it and you could have an opening band, who would it be?
The Pixies would be up there. The Pixies, Talking Heads, they would both be up there. I would have to be a different person and write poems that could be on the same stage as them, but it would be awesome.
I think a lot of people would disagree with you. I think it's a good thing that there's a stage for your poems now. Let's hear Grief. If you'll read it for us, Matthew.
Of course. Grief. When grief comes to you, as a purple gorilla, you must count yourself lucky. You must offer her what's left of your dinner. The book you were trying to finish, you must put aside and make her a place to sit at the foot of your bed. Her eyes moving from the clock to the television and back again. I am not afraid. She has been here before, and now I can recognize her gait as she approaches the house. Some nights, when I know she's coming, I unlock the door, lie down on my back, and count her steps from the street to the porch. Tonight, she brings a pencil and a ream of paper, tells me to write down everyone I have ever known, and we separate them between the living and the dead, so she can pick each name at random. I play her favorite Willie Nelson album because she misses Texas, but I don't ask why. She hums a little, the way my brother does when he gardens. We sit for an hour while she tells me how unreasonable I've been, crying in the checkout line, refusing to eat, refusing to shower, all the smoking and all the drinking. Eventually, she puts one of her heavy purple arms around me, leans her head against mine, and all of a sudden, things are feeling romantic. So I tell her, things are feeling romantic. She pulls another name, this time from the dead, and turns to me in that way that parents do so you feel embarrassed or ashamed of something. Romantic, she says, reading the name out loud, slowly, so I'm aware of each syllable, wrapping around the bones like new muscle, the sound of that person's body, and how reckless it is, how careless, that his name is in one pile and not the other.
Thank you, Matthew.
You're welcome.
Is this a poem, and in the book, is this a poem that was written after the 8 months, so then an example of your way of writing without rules?
It was, and it was actually written about 85% or 90% of the book was written actually after I graduated from my MFA. So I think there's like maybe four poems in the book that are in my thesis, and then the rest came afterwards. But this is certainly one that was written after that time of not writing.
And it's funny how that works, isn't it, with the MFA, because you have a thesis, and then you think that might be it, but it's really, like you said, 95% almost was what you made afterwards, which is what became this first book, this prize-winning book.
Yeah, it's a lot of the time, like first books will be a lot of someone's thesis, and almost every first book, not all, but almost every first book now is written by someone who has gone through an MFA program for good or bad, the MFA program, or the decision for me to go to one, wasn't really necessarily to write a book. It was that I had been out of undergrad and working for a while, and I thought, well, it might be nice not to work for a couple years. And so I thought about MFA programs as a sort of fellowship, you know, to write.
Time and money. And Austin seemed like a good place, especially since, by some miracle, that's where Michael also got in. So there's this odd, like, stroke of luck. So you guys could be in the same town again for a
stroke of luck. And also, I should say, written apologies. We got in, but the board was, and for good reason, distrustful after looking at our undergraduate history.
Well, because you were less than stellar, right?
Than stellar. That's really a polite and diplomatic way to say it. I spent 7 years as an undergrad, and I think I graduated with a 2.3 or 4, something like that. I was not a great student. I was excited about school in a way. You know, I romanticize about college campuses because they're often so beautiful, and you know, people going to classes with their books and maybe even some ivy on the side of some building somewhere,
or on their shoulder even, perhaps,
or on their shoulder even. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, not a great student. But by the time I had done my gone to do the MFA, I was older and I was a little more concentrated as a person.
It's almost like you give Austin a shout out with grief when you say, "I play her favorite Willie Nelson album because she misses Texas." Maybe
absolutely.
The broken spoke.
Yeah, I really miss Austin. Maybe I should play my favorite Willie Nelson album.
I think that's what you were doing in this poem, in a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. I think you're right.
And it's wonderful because you actually, so many of, the ideas and the images that you work within seem to be also present in this poem. For example, like there's a brother that comes into the poem as well, and when he gardens, and the feeling like of romance, and then the body, and so it's, and definitely it's almost so unsettling, really, when you think about making a list of the people who are living and the dead. And yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
Now do you feel like you're back in one of those high school classrooms? And so
not at all. No,
trying to ask you. So, and that's also because you were a visiting writer at Reed College as well, too. So working with college students.
Actually hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I've read there, but that's I'm excited about it. It's going to happen, I believe, in October. That will happen.
Okay. Well, so I'm getting ahead of ourselves with that one. But
it's okay. October will be great. It'll be beautiful here in Portland, and, you know, I wish it was October right now.
And how do you feel about returning to Portland, where you were born, and a place that is so alive in this particular book of poems, All American Poem?
I feel really good about it. It was really important and moving that I was here when the book arrived in the post, you know, to be in the place where I started writing poems to begin with. And I've come and gone from Portland for years, and returning this last time about a year ago, it was kind of a hard return in a way, but when I got settled in here, I was really excited to be here. And Portland is full of all of these, like, amazing artists and writers and filmmakers and musicians, and I've been lucky enough to, find some of them and have some of them find me and start building these exciting relationships.
So you have the relationships from when you were a youth, and then the ones that you're building now, too, and some of them may even be the same people in an arts community.
It's true, yeah. And it, at first when I came back, it felt like two different Portlands, you know, like the Portland of my youth, and then this new Portland that I was returning to. But the longer I'm here, those two sort of ends get closer and closer to meeting in the middle, which is nice.
So, yeah. So a new place yet again, then, in some ways.
It is. Yeah, it is. And it seems like really thriving right now from other times I've returned. And that could be me. You know, maybe it's always been that way. But that feels true right now.
Well, you're definitely thriving now. And I imagine, are you also, is this a time of producing a lot of new work as well?
I am writing a lot of new work right now. I've actually been able to go down. I work at a Whole Foods grocery store, and they've been kind enough to let me go down to part-time. It's the first time, Tita, I've ever worked part-time in my life.
Is it sort of nerve-wracking?
Oh, I felt so guilty about it the first, like, couple weeks. But now I love it, and it does allow me to write new poems, which I've been writing and then sending on to now my new editor, Michael Wieger, is at Copper Canyon Press, which is also kind of a new experience. Elizabeth Scanlon, this brilliant poet and editor at American Poetry Review, my experience with her as an editor was so great, and I'm just lucky that I can move from her to another great editor and send him new work.
So how does that work? Do you, how long does it, can you walk us through something? Like, do you have, like, a group of poems and then you send them to Michael Wieger's over at Copper Canyon? Or is it something that's more even, you know, kind of more free-flowing than that? So it could be one poem and then send it. And does he give you feedback?
With me, it's more free-flowing. I mean, I can be kind of an ecstatic idiot. I mean, a lot of people might not, like, write up to, like, only a second or third draft of a poem and be excited about it and send it to their editor, you know?
Right.
But whatever. I'll get home from work, and I'll be, you know, up until 2 in the morning writing, and I'll be excited about something, and I'll just shoot it to him in an email. And then also sometimes I will put, like, 4 or 5 poems together and print them up and mail them as a more formal sort of.
Ooh, yes. Like thing. You're wearing a suit.
Oh, totally. Like, you know, mom's in the audience, put a tie on.
What?
Right, try not to cuss.
Yes. And you're doing great, by the way.
Got
to give you some props for that. I read somewhere also today that you had said at some point that that you feel like you maybe put a lot of the daily or the anxiety that builds in life, and you put that in the poems, but it sort of becomes translated into this ecstatic hopefulness.
Yeah, I it does. It's, you know, often those things for me, like anxiety, like being on a plane and there being a lot of turbulence, and the anxiety that I feel then compared to like the anxiety I feel like maybe kissing someone I like and have wanted to kiss for a long time for the first time. Those are two very different experiences, but the energy of them for me and my body sometimes seem very, very similar. And also I think that we should, if we can, or I think that I hopefully try to celebrate just the things in my life, and that includes all things in my life, really difficult things, and then, you know, really lucky, maybe more like happier things. I think they all have a place, and whenever I sit down to write, I hope in the best poems that they're all given the same amount of thought and honor, you know.
Yes. That's actually a really great thing to say, I think, because so often it seems like we do, like you mentioned at the top of the hour with the, going to poems in times of like maybe at funerals or in times of great sadness or maybe when people are keeping journals, and a lot of times that's where the source of the the words spring from, but it seems like it is important definitely to be, because it, the ecstatic nature of poetry and the celebratory is equally as important. And so, yeah, you said it so well, Matthew. Let's, we're going to take a short break. Maybe when we come back, would you mind reading your ode to your neighborhood, the Lentz District,
yeah,
and then maybe in some new work as well?
Okay, that sounds like fun.
Okay, we're going to take a short break today on Living Writers. You're listening to Matthew Dickman, his book, All American Poem. We'll be back. Welcome back. I'm T. Hetzel. You're listening to Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. Today on the program, Matthew Dickman, his book, All American Poem. Matthew, that is a great song. You know, sometimes I haven't stopped to listen to that song. I should say all the songs were picked by Matthew today that we're hearing for our breaks.
See, I can't hear them when they play. Which one was it?
Oh, that one was the Talking Heads.
It's a great song.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. So you're sitting there sort of waiting for us to come back, like the voice and the out of nothing, right?
No, it's okay. It's you know, it's not like the DMV. It's fine.
There's no one interesting to look at, though, probably. Or
not really. I'm sort of just I'm looking at some beautiful plants.
Well, there you go. Some peaceful plants. Have you ever written a poem when you were in the DMV? Like, is that, do you carry a little notebook around? And
I don't. Although, you know, those moments like at the DMV or, you know, these places where we go in our lives are, you know, always, you know, with me when I get home and I sit down and write. I actually can't write in public, like at a cafe or something, because my mind gets too easily occupied with things around me, you know, people walking by or people's conversations and that sort of thing. So it's sort of impossible. I have to be alone with everything, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, which is so, that's kind of amazing to hear, because when people are reading through your book, All American Poem, they might, or even listening to one of your latest poems, Coffee, they might imagine that you are actually, because you say in that poem, Coffee, you're stirring the cream into the coffee. And so it's very in that. So you recreate the moment very well, even if you're writing it at 2 a.m.
Right. Well, it's sort of like, I think about it, it's like, you know, you go swimming, like if you go like jump in like a pool, or you go like, maybe luckily you get to go swim in a pond or something. And you know how great your skin smells for the rest of the day? Like it still smells.
Yes, yeah.
Like that cold water. I think that's just sort of like our experiences in life at the end of the day. You know, you can still smell, depending on the day, it's either like you can still smell that wonderful, clear, beautiful water from the lake, or you can smell that that chlorine.
Yeah, a little bit of a little bit of the day's stink as well, right? But maybe, and that's the part, those, what you do, maybe those are the essences that you're distilling for your poems. That's what stands out then.
Yeah, it does stand out. It totally stands out.
How do you feel about people always attaching words like exuberant and all embracing? And so does it make you want to become a curmudgeon some days? Or
No, not at all. And also, like, the poems have their own life separate from me.
Yes.
So it's, I don't think they're not talking about me. You know, they're talking about their experience with the poem, which is often, like, very different from my experience writing it. Like, I've written poems where I thought they were very serious all the way through, and then I go read it at a reading, and people are, like, laughing.
Right.
You know, and it's so, like, confusing, you know, and it's fine. But that's the point, is that the poems have their own life. And my brother has talked about this, and other people have talked about this as well, which is, like, the poems don't know that people like them.
Or what people are making of them.
Or what people are making of them. They don't know if you're working full-time or working part-time. Or
if you have health insurance.
People are hating you or loving you, you know, and they don't care.
Is that something you've also had to keep in mind? Because this last year, there's been so much that has happened. And in maybe relating to, like, the books, your book coming out, Michael's book coming out, the media surrounding it as well, which in the poetry world, I guess it was quite a lot considering what many poets, right? So it's almost like a blitz.
Yeah,
right. My friend Katie Hartsoff
on a very, you know, small island, and I mean, it stemmed from, it's really just an accident of time that our books came out at the same time. I mean, it's a pure accident.
Yes, or something, you know, serendipitous.
Or serendipitous, yeah. You know, like, my book had been looked at by a couple other really wonderful editors who in the end said no to it. Well, said no to, like, a very early version of this book that's now out.
Right.
So there was a chance that my book could have been published in a very different version, like, 4 years ago.
Isn't that strange, too? Because
yeah.
Especially.
And then if Michael's book was published 4 years after, I don't think there would have been the worry and the attention, you know.
Does it feel like a, because that's why I wonder if it feels like a worry to you, or if by thinking about the poems, which I think you're exactly right in, and so is Michael, that they have lives of their own. If they're actually art. Because there's poems in the world that we need for certain reasons, right?
Or
to write for certain reasons, but they don't necessarily mean that. I don't know. Not to say that they're not.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's that if they are art, then they are their own thing, and they live their own lives. And also with, like, this sort of attention that the books have received. That I've received is very, for me, so separate from my life in poetry and my life writing poems. You know, I've wrote poems for years, and, you know,
since you were a kid,
piles of rejection slips, you know.
Right.
So my life in poetry as a reader and as a writer is pretty separate and pretty anchored in, you know, a very, like, really great, creative, sober space.
Well, thank goodness for that, then, right? Because I think otherwise that could change. Like you said, you had an event that changed your writing life dramatically, so much so that you didn't write for 8 months. This could be something that could also have an effect which you might not even be aware of in the work.
Right.
I don't know, but
that's true. Well, the lucky thing is, T, at the end, I mean, poetry means everything, but also to me, but also at the end, it is just poems. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if that's, like, the elephant in the room no one talks about.
Or the purple gorilla.
Or the purple gorilla in the room, yeah, when people get awards and get freaked out, and you know, but
right.
you know, in the end, it's just, I mean, we're just writing poems. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like being a shoe cobbler or something. You know, it's a great way to be in the world without harming people, and it's a great thing for our lives. But I think, like many things, what's at stake is often just what we invent.
Yes, as human beings.
As human beings,
the human construct. Yeah, definitely. Hey, let's hear. Do you mind? Could we hear the Lentz poem?
I'd love to. It's okay. You know, it's a love poem, and I like reading love poems. So, Lentz District. Whenever I return, a fight breaks out in the park. Someone buys a lottery ticket, steals a bottle of vodka, lights a cigarette underneath the overpass. 205 rips the neighborhood in half, the way the Willamette rips the city in half. It sounds like the ocean if I'm sitting alone in the backyard looking up at the lilac. This is where white kids lived and listened to Black Sabbath, while they beat each other for bragging rights, running in packs, carrying baseball bats that were cut from the same trees our parents had planted before the Asian kids moved in to run the mini-marts and carry knives to school, before the Mexicans moved in and mowed everyone's front yard. White kids, wanting anything anybody ever took from them in shaved heads and combat boots. On the weekend, our furious mothers applied their lipstick that left red cuts on the ends of their Marlboro Reds, and our fathers quietly did whatever fathers do when trying to keep the dogs of sorrow from tearing them limb from limb. Lentz, I have been away so long. I imagine that you're a musical some rich kid from New York wrote about debt, then threw in Kool-Aid to make it funny. I can see the dance line, the high kicks of the skinheads, twirling metal pipes, stomping in unison, while the committed rage of the gypsy jokers square off with the committed rage of the single mothers. In the end, someone gets evicted, someone gets jumped into his new family, and they call themselves Los Brazos, King Cobras, Southside, White Pride. Dear Lentz, dear 82nd Avenue, dear 92nd and Foster, I am your strange son. You saved me when I needed saving, your arms wrapped around my bassinet like patrol cars wrapped around the schoolyard the night Jason went crazy, waving his father's gun above his head, bathed in red and blue flashing lights, all American, broken in half, and beautiful.
Thank you, Matthew.
You're welcome.
So is everything a love poem?
For me, yeah. Yes. I would like to say yes. For me, every poem is definitely a love poem. And I think in important ways and in different ways, probably every poem we've ever read is a love poem. In that love poems have these attributes to them, like hopefulness and often despair sometimes, depending on the love poem, but also like, this ecstatic energy and wonderment and all these things. And those are things that create art. Pessimism and meanness have never created good art. And if they've gotten close to making anything that resembles art because of the ingredients, it's always been really bad and easily dismissed, I think.
Yes. And there's something about the truth of something that if you're trying to say the truth as close as you can to it, then that is love.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you are trying to, you know, in our failed, wonderful, clownish human way to reach for truth, then it is definitely love.
And I wanted to say you were very graceful in there, because I asked you to read this poem, forgetting that there was, you had to make an allusion there, just a very neat one, to kind of make allowances for the FCC. So thank you also for that.
You know, okay. I want you to have your job full time or part time.
Thank you
for the silly. It is too bad. The FCC is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can say that, right?
Oh, you're right. I don't know. If we don't come back after the break, then you'll know.
We'll know.
Okay. So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back. Today, we're joined by Matthew Dickman, talking with us from Portland, Oregon. His book, All American Poem, out from Copper Canyon Press. We'll be right back.
I know his teeth as white as snow. What a gas it was to see him walk her every day into a shady place with her lips. She said it pie, pie.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Matthew Dickman from Portland, Oregon, All American Poem, his latest, picked by APR as the book for the first book prize and out by Copper Canyon Press. Matthew, could you hear the music that time?
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. It's such an incredible song by the Pixies. And I was just thinking, like, oh, man, that song makes you want to just run out and have gigantic love. And, you know, if I could, like, this is an impossible dream, but if I could ever write something that would make someone feel the way I do when I hear Kim Deal sing that song, it would be like better than like any sort of like prize in the world.
it's true, isn't it? I'm sitting here nodding, but I realize you can't see me doing that. But well, this is a good time to say thanks to Brian and Alex for getting all the music,
guys,
and for engineering. And actually letting you hear it that time. They held up a sign and said, problem solved. So you'll be able to hear it. So gigantic love. And so now you've got some time. You're making time for the poems and the new work that's coming. What do you find? What are you able to? Are you in the midst of it? So it's hard to maybe talk about it, like see it in some sort of other way. I was going to say, is there something you can say that feels different about the work you're doing now than maybe the work we've been hearing and talking about?
I've been writing, sometimes I've been working on shorter poems.
Oh.
I guess it's just like formally different.
But that's really a bit different.
The subject of the book, though, is right now, tentatively, the second book is called Benevolence, which is a new poem. And I think it's going to be, it's seemingly likely to be a little bit of a darker book in a way. A lot of the poems I've been writing deals with the death of an older brother. But there's also love poems that are being written to various things, from food to coffee to people.
Do you mind me asking if the death of your older brother, was that the event that caused you to stop writing for 8 months as well? Like, that was traumatic and
No, that wasn't. Okay. That wasn't at all. No, and it's no secret. I mean, back, you know, when I was at the University of Texas, I came back to Portland. I just had, you know, like I'm sure many of us, I had kind of a little bit of a psychic breakdown in a way, and so decided that probably, therapy, exercise, and eating three times a day was more important than coffee and poems.
And yes, you know? Yeah, whiskey and making.
My older brother's death happened a couple years ago now, and it's just now that I'm starting to be able to write about it in a way that it does, like we said earlier, become art and not just like a needful thing.
And just and only from the sadness and the pain, yeah.
Yeah, but also now from like a celebration.
And it seems like it's inescapable, perhaps for you, to not have your brothers, your mother, your sister, your family moving through the work.
Totally inescapable. I mean, it's as inescapable as like not mentioning, you know, a Kinko's or Burger King, if that's what is coming up in the poem.
Well, that's a way to make it lighter, too, Matthew. There.
Well, I mean, it's true. Like, these are all parts of our lives. Like, in this benevolent poem, you know, it kind of starts off because I had this experience right after my older brother Darren died where these cats were fighting, and I went out there. And I've never done this before, but I went out there and I started throwing rocks at them.
At both, you know, of them, just to break them up or?
To break them up, but probably for some other reasons too. And then, but I can't throw a ball.
What?
You know what I mean? Like, I suck at it.
So basically the rocks were just not hitting the cats at all.
No, of course not. Not with me throwing them. And then suddenly I was in the backyard, you know, like tears running down my face, but also like laughing too at myself because like this is the real world. And in Little League, I was so bad.
It all comes back. But
yeah,
no, but
I mean it's all happening now at the same time.
But in a way, it's like you're experiencing, it's in some ways like this release, but also like powerlessness too. And that's,
oh, yeah,
that's like the truth of things, isn't it? In some ways.
It is.
Yeah. And trying. So do you have the poem Benevolence that you could read for us, Matthew, or?
Oh yeah, I do. Hold on.
Is that one ready for the airwaves, the ether?
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah.
Or did you have another one in mind? Because whatever you'd like to read.
No, we can read. Yeah, we might as well read Benevolence. I have it here. Benevolence. After my older brother died, and I had punished the migraines with enough codeine to sleep through the night, I walked out into the backyard with the moon illuminating everything like an antidepressant, and threw a rock at two feral cats who seemed bent on killing each other. It was not a mystical moment or a therapeutic one. I did not link the feline fight of wills with my own. It just felt good to throw something. The fact that I missed is not a telling sign of my own benevolence or a metaphor about the inaction of violence. It only means that I've always sucked at baseball. That I couldn't throw a ball into a glove if the ball was in my right hand and the glove in my left. That I preferred to be standing in the outfield where the grass had grown tall and the clouds formed a menagerie of animals above my head, standing there with only one wish, that no one would hit the ball hard enough to reach me. But the weight of the rock and the sound of it ripping through the trees, crashing against the fence, was enough to make up for all the Little League humiliations I had garnered through my intense fear of physical injury. The time I actually dove out of the way, the ball sailing beyond the dugout. The time I could have scored if I had slid into the dirt, but instead walked as if I had nowhere important to be. Even as I watched my older brother skin knee after knee, break bone after bone, always surviving, always being able to bite down on what the world had given him, what he had made of it, and still walk along the bases, the streets, the rugs of countless therapists, still swallow the glowing pills humming in the bottom of countless paper cups, his arms bound to the bed by cotton straps, the razor he once slid along his arm like a beam of light. I couldn't manage the smallest cut, the most laughable bruise. When I walked out into the backyard and held the rock in my hand, I wanted so badly not just to throw it, but to hit something and make it hurt.
Thank you, Matthew.
You're welcome.
For reading that one. And that's part of the some new work that you have.
Yeah. Yeah, that will hopefully become a second book at some point.
The next book, yeah. Is it also are there more ideas? Are you also at this point bringing, it seems like, God into it as well? And I don't know. Not in a waving the God flag sort of way, but trying to grapple with, because I read a poem of yours also online, at least a piece of it called Divinity. And
It
made me think that might be part of, and with the word benevolence as, as like a title.
It's, I don't think so. But then again, it's hard for me to know as I write them.
Of course,
You know, if that is something that is coming, that for some reason is coming up right now. But not, I don't think, certainly not on purpose.
Well, God, you know, is dog spelled backwards, which is a three-letter word, which is like pig. And I wanted to bring up, before we have to go, I wanted to mention, like, what's the importance of the word pig to you, if you don't mind telling us?
No, I don't. I can tell it quickly. My brother and I, growing up in grade school, we were picked on horribly. And then, you know, got out of that. But and there was that. And then also in our neighborhood, you know, all of the kids, it was sort of like Lord of the Flies in a way in that neighborhood, but sometimes even worse. And when
no
we were
island
sophomores
setting.
In high school, we were in a class with this brilliant teacher named Tim Joy, and he had everyone read Lord of the Flies. And at the end, Ralph, the main character, says something to the English soldiers who have landed about the fall of man and all of these kids doing horrible things. He says, except for Piggy, you know, my one true friend, is basically what he says. And Michael and I read that, and we were like, oh, you know, you're kind of like my one true friend.
Oh.
And so from like 1989 or 90 on, we've just called each other Pig.
It's no one would ever suspect that's
no.
where it came from.
Really.
Well, thank you so much for being on the program today, Matthew.
Okay,
I've so enjoyed
it. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks, Alex and Brian. And I had a really good time, and I'll think about it when I'm at work today.
Yeah, don't work too hard, by the way.
Okay. Well, if anyone from Whole Foods is listening, I'm going to work really, really, really hard. And if they're not listening, I'm probably going to slack off a little bit and take 15-minute breaks.
I think that would be great. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you so much. Take care.
So good talking with you, Matthew.
You too.
You've been listening to Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Matthew Dickman on the program today. His book, All American Poem. Thanks for listening, Ann Arbor, for streaming wherever you are, be it Portland, Florida, Chicago. And I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.